call, if you want to round something, here is the round to two decimal places. math.roundAnswer times 100, copy it. And that will round to two decimal places. If you want to round to one decimal places, make the hundreds tens. If you want to round to three decimal places, make the hundreds of thousands. And that little formula, the math round, is a formula that JavaScript has, and this is the input it needs. Answer is the thing I want to round, so I'm calling an answer there. You call it whatever field you want to call it. And you can insert that, and it will round it. So I have here answer rounded equals math round answer, and I'm rounding it. Okay? If you have amount, then you would write amount rounded or something. It doesn't matter what the names are. That can be apples and bananas. So apples equals math round bananas times, etc. Okay, but I call them answer and answer rounded.
So as you have it there,
yep,
that's going to round it up to how many decimals?
Two decimal places. Okay. Round a field called answer to two decimal places.
Oh.
Okay. So that will round it to two decimal places. And if you only want it to one, you'd use a 10 instead of 100 both places. And if you want three decimal places, you'd use 1,000 instead of 100. But usually people are rounding to one or two decimal places. Okay. Math.round is a function that JavaScript has. And they have a series of math functions, and we're going to look at another one pretty soon. But math.something uses a function that JavaScript has behind the scenes. Okay, and it just says, go use that round function to round the number. Okay. The other question that I've gotten a lot is the test for uppercase. And here is code that I wrote for that. So there is the test for uppercase. So I started out and I set up a variable called test, and I called it hello world. I set up a variable. This could be something you took in from a prompt. It's fine. It doesn't matter where you get it from. I just set up a variable. And then I said, if test dot to uppercase with two parentheses. And that calls the JavaScript function to convert it to an uppercase. So if test dot, and then whatever the name of the field you want to convert is, you write the name of the field, dot to uppercase, open parenthesis, close parenthesis. So I converted test and said, now that I've converted it, compare it to hello world.
How would you get
in
the
uppercase? Pardon me?
How would you get the else option?
Actually, if I had a different word up there, at this point that would be the only way you'd get it. So if I said hello earth, then it wouldn't compare. It would still be uppercase, but it wouldn't be equal. Okay. And then I wrote document write, it worked. Document write, test to uppercase. And otherwise, else I said document write problem. And the problem would be not that it didn't convert it right, although if I didn't write that right, it would not convert it right. But the only problem I can see is if I had put the wrong things in test world, because I wrote it correctly. But if I'd written two uppercase without a P in there, I'd have gotten an error. Actually, I think it would have kicked me out.
What would be the use for that?
Biggest use is if you don't trust your user, and I never trust my user. Okay? And so you're not sure whether the user is going to type it in an uppercase or lowercase. and you're asking them to type in the Y or the Y. That would be the biggest. You know how we've said yes, to, and you, we've said you can compare to uppercase Y or lowercase Y? Well, this would save you from having to compare to both of those, because you could take in their answer and then say answer to uppercase equals Y. And that would convert whatever they typed in as the answer, whether they typed an uppercase Y or a lowercase Y, that would convert it. Okay, so if you have an answer and you're asking them to put in Y and you want to test it, then you're going to say answer and I want to convert that to uppercase. Okay, equals, okay, equals Y. So then I can say it answered uppercase equals Y. Okay, so I can compare, instead of saying if answer equals capital Y or answer equals lowercase Y, I can just say convert it to uppercase, and then I only have to test it. So this would be the same as saying if answer equals Y or, I guess I should write it in JavaScript, or answer equals Y. Okay, so that would be the same as writing it that way. And I'm not sure you saved that much keystrokes, but anyway, that's an alternate way of looking for that the, you wanted the user to type in a Y, and they wanted them to type in a capital Y. I can also just do it by saying upper answer equals, and then say answer to uppercase, and store it in upper answer or something like that. Okay. So that's a way that I can convert to uppercase. And what I'm usually converting when I do something like that is not what I did, which is to putting up a variable. What I'm usually converting is user input, because I don't trust my user. Okay, to give me the capital Y, even though I put capital Y and say enter capital Y or capital N, still don't trust them, so this converts it. And as a developer, you should never trust your user. Okay? Questions? Okay, so those are two things that I've been asked about. Okay, I'm going to go into and look at, we stopped looking at math facts, and we looked at math facts with a nested while loop, and I'm going to return to that and then move on. Okay. So again, I've got two loops going on here. I've got an inner loop and I've got an outer loop. And notice how they work. The inner loop, and you can see the numbers over here. If you put it up on your screen, I kind of lose them here. But that's count in, and that's answer. And we looked at this right at the end last time. So I've got, if you look at them, count is three ones, then three twos, then three threes. Okay? So count is the outer loop. And count in is the control for the inner loop. So if you look at this, count is all of the stuff, controlling all of the stuff in there, because that's the outer loop. Count in is controlling the stuff in here. That's the inner loop. So it does the outer loop once, and then it goes in, and it does the inner loop three times. So that's why I get 1 plus 1, 1 plus 2, 1 plus 3. Because count stays at 1. It goes in, it does the inner loop three times. When the inner loop is done, I add 1 to count, so it goes back to up to 2. So there's 2, 2, 2. That's the outer loop. And when I go inside, I reset count into 1, and I do it 3 times. So I get 2 plus 1, 2 plus 2, 2 plus 3. Then I'm done. I add 1 to count, and it's now up to a 3. I go back out. I come in and reset count into 1 and do the inner loop 3 times. So I get 3 plus 1, 3 plus 2, 3 plus 3. And now I've maxed out on the outer loop, and I'm done. Okay? So count is controlling the outer loop, and it only changes when I go back to the outer loop. Count in is the inner loop, and it changes every time I go through it. So again, if I start count out at 1, and count in, I didn't start at anything because I didn't want to mess things up. Because the important place to set count in is this place right here. I want to set before I enter the inner loop. And so if I enter the inner loop, I want to do that. Entering is different from looping back. Entering means drop down into it. Okay? Enter the inner loop means drop down. And if you look at this, if I'm coming in from the top, I set count into 1 and I drop down to the loop. After I've done the loop once, I just loop back. I don't go up above it, I just loop back. And so count is only changed because I say count in equals count in plus 1. But I don't go out, so it's not reset. But when I go out to the outer loop and then drop in, it gets reset. Okay? So, the first time I drop in, it gets set to 1. Then, as I mentioned before, answer I never defined. I should have, but I didn't. And it forgave me because answer is on the left. And so I'm adding 2 things and putting it in answer. And so it says, oh, you need a variable answer, and it sets it up for me. If answer had been part of the calculation on the right, it couldn't have done the calculation because it wouldn't know what answer was. And so I would have gotten an error. So in other words, it was all right not to define answer because I used it as a result. But it wouldn't be all right if I tried to use it as part of a calculation. Because if I try to use it as part of a calculation, it can't say count plus count in plus answer or something. Because it wouldn't know what to add for answer. Well, when it's a result, the browsers are smart enough to say, oh, you need answer. We'll set it up for you. Now, would it have been better to define answer? Yeah. But then I wouldn't have got to explain that. So, it's a good thing I didn't. Okay, so I set count into 1, I drop in. It defines answer because it needs it, and the answer is 2. And it writes out 1 + 1 = 2. All of those are concatenated together. And again, the VR does not need the slash in it, but it doesn't do any harm. Okay, that's the way I wrote it in XHTML, which was the previous version of HTML5. And it still understands it because people would scream and yell if it didn't. Okay, so it understands it. It does everything. It understands all of XHTML. So then I add 1 to count in, so it's now up to a 2. I loop back, is count in less than or equal to 3? Yes, it is. I calculate answer, which is now a 3. I write out 1 + 2 = 3, and I add 1 to count in. Okay, I go back, count in is less than or equal to 3. I add 1 and 3, and I get 4. I write out 1 + 3 = 4, and I add 1 to count in. Now when I go back and check, count in is no longer less than or equal to 3. So that means I'm not going to do the inner loop again. So it drops out and it hits count equals count plus 1. So it adds 1 to count. It goes back. Is count less than or equal to 3? Yes, it is. 2 is less than or equal to 3. It adds 1 to count in. It sets count into 1, sorry. Sets count into 1. Okay, and then enters the loop. Now, if I hadn't set count into 1, count in would still be a 4. So if I didn't have that line, count in would be a 4. 4 is not less than or equal to 3, so it would never go into the inner loop. So the inner loop would never be done, a second round. Okay, so that reset right before I go in is critical. And again, the 3 things you need for a loop are to set the control, check the control, and change the control. And in this case, we have 2 controls, count and count in. Count in is controlling the outer loop. Count in is controlling the inner loop. I think I just said that backwards. Count is controlling the outer loop, and count in is controlling the inner loop. So I have 2 controls because I have 2 loops. And I have to be careful of how I set them, so that I set them prior to entering the loop. Questions? Does that really make sense? That was a dubious look. Yeah, I know it makes sense to you, Eric. Does it make sense, folks?
Yeah.
Does it?
Yes,
that was a yes? Okay. This is just really important because it really gets into logic in a fairly, fairly sophisticated way. And if you understand this, it's a really good sign. And if you don't understand it and you're hiding that fact, you really should ask questions. Yeah, I never ask questions in class either, but you should. Questions? Okay. I'm taking your word for it. Okay, in this one I have the do while loop for a single loop. And the do while loop is very similar to the while loop except for one important thing. And that is, I check at the bottom as opposed to checking at the top. Which means that I'm always going to do it once. Okay? So even if I set count up here, if I set count at 4, I would still drop in and do it once. 4 plus 4 is 8. I'd write out 4 plus 4 equals 8. I'd add 1 to count and it was a 5 now. And I'd say, is 5 less than or equal to 3? No, it's not, so I won't do it again. But I will always get it once. Because I don't check before I do it. I just say, do it. And I check after to see if I should do it again. Okay? So I always do it once. And I check at the bottom to see if I want to do it again. And the next one is going to be a nested version of this. So there's a nested do while. And as you can see, the output is exactly the same. It's just that I test afterward.
Okay.
So here is the outer loop. The outer loop is that. And the test is at the bottom. Here's the inner loop, and the test is at the bottom. Okay. Questions? But it works exactly the same way. It's just that I test at the bottom. And this is a different kind of loop, the for loop. And the for loop is kind of an interesting loop. Because the for loop, whoops, the for loop does everything in the for. So here I am doing the set. Here I'm doing the check. Here I'm doing the change. And in this case, I'm calling my variable I. For some reason, people, when they write the for loop, call the variable I for index. And I'm just in the habit, so I went ahead and called it I as opposed to count. It could just as easily have been count. So in the for loop, I do everything in the for statement itself. So this is the set, that is the check, and that is the change. Okay, and it's, they know with the for loop that the set is the first time. It's the first time I do the for, okay? And then the add is after I've done it every other time. The I equals I plus 1, the change is when I come back. When I come back, I'm adding 1, but I don't do it the first time. So I starts out at 1, and I go down and say answer equals 1 plus 1, and I write out 1 plus 1 equals 2. Then when I go back, it adds 1 to I, so I is now a 2, and it checks to see if I is less than or equal to 3. It is, so it does it a second time. Okay, and then it does it a third time. When I add 1 to I to make it a 4, it checks, and 4 is not less than or equal to 3, so it stops. You see how that works? Now, this for loop is used mainly for things like this. When I have numbers that I want to do it on a count, I want to do it 5 times, I want to do it 7 times, whatever. That's mainly when you use a for loop. You don't use a for loop when you're checking for a y to see if you want to do it again or something like that. That's not when you use a for loop. A for loop is used when you have a counter and you're counting how many times you're doing it. Now, if I wanted to, I can start I out at 2. I can add 2 to I. So I'm going to go 2, 4, 6, 8, 10. I can have my check anything I want. Okay. But the for loop is kind of specialized. So now we're going to look at, briefly, the for nested. And this one really kind of does the thinking for you as to when. So I just have I equals 1, I is less than 3, I equals I plus 1, then J is the inner. And I space that out to show you that either way works. You can either have spaces around the equal sign or not spaces around it. So I just wrote them slightly differently. So I is the control for the outer loop. J is the control for the inner loop. It takes care of setting J because when I hit on the drop down, okay, J is set when I drop down. J is set when I drop down. I'm really doing very well on my spelling. So J is set when I drop down. Okay, so in the other ones I would have had J equals 1 right before the for statement or right before the while statement. But here I just have it as part of it. And it knows that it sets it on a drop down. But if I'm looping back, it does the adding. So it understands that you only set on a drop down. When you loop back, you increment. Questions?
So which is the most common one to use, the while do or for?
While. That's the one that is used the most often. The for is used a lot when you're doing a counter like this. But that's very specialized. You know, if I'm doing something that just lends itself to a counter, then the for is used quite a lot. But it's only for that kind of thing. So I would say a while is definitely used the most. Okay. It's certainly the one I use the most. And the while is supported in every language, and it's very similar in every language. So once you know the while, you know the while. That said, we're going to skip arrays for a while. And we'll actually take a look at those when we're in Visual Basic and looking at arrays. We'll go back and look at how they're done in JavaScript. So the last three things I want to do are these guess numbers. Guess number, one guess, one game, multiple games. So that's the last thing we're looking at. And what I have those working on is a do while, because I always want to do it once. If I'm playing a game, I always want to do it once to start out with. So I used a do while. Now, this first one only gives me one guess. So if I don't get it, I'm out of luck. Okay, so I only have one guess. And because I want to test, I actually wrote what the random number that was chosen was up there. And I'll show you how you get a random number in a minute. So I wrote the number. So if I enter the guess of 3, because that's what it says, okay, you got it. If I do this again, this time the random number is 5. If I enter a 3 as my guess again, it comes back and says your guess is too low. So it tells me I didn't get it. Okay. And if I enter a 1 this time, it comes back, tells me it's too low. That's the one I already did. Let's see. If I enter a 4 when it should be a 2, it comes back and tells me your guess is too high. And if I enter a 1 when it said it was a 1, it comes back and says you got it. Okay. So now let's look at the code. Okay, the first thing is that the math dot I told you about, it has a couple of other things that I'm using here. Math random is code to generate a random number. And generating a random number is pretty complex code. And so it's delightful that almost that all the languages that I know of supply you with a function that will get you a random number. And then math floor turns it into a whole number. So what I'm saying here is go out and get a random number. And math random gets me a random number up to 5. Math floor makes it a whole number. And plus 1 means it starts at 1 instead of 0, because random numbers start with 0. And I want it to start with 1, so the plus 1 gets me a random number from 1 to 5. So this gets me a random number from 1 to 5. If I wanted 25, I'd put a 25 instead of the 5. If I wanted 40, I'd put a 40 instead of the 5. Okay? So this gets me a random number from 1 to 5. And the only thing you have to change as you copy and paste that is if you want to go from 1 to 10, you change the 5 to a 10. Okay. Then I wanted to see the random number, so I did a document write to get me the random number. And then I wrote a blank line after the random number so that I was ready for the message. Then I did a prompt and I said, enter your guess. And in case they didn't enter a whole number, I parsed it to an integer, so that I have an integer that they entered. So I'm hoping that they're going to guess 1 to 5. It probably would have been nicer to write into your guess 1 to 5 and given them that information, but I didn't. Notice that I didn't put a comma 0 or a comma quote quote. That means that I'm not telling it how to fill the box that comes up with the prompt. Now, in today's browsers, most of them come up with an empty box, so it's fine. Okay, but some browsers would bring up some words in there, you know, that said something like enter or something here or whatever. And if I didn't want those words, the comma zero or the comma quote quote guarantees me that I'll either get nothing or a zero. But I don't have to do that. So I said put out the prompt, and again, window.prompt. The window dot is optional. That means a prompt in the window. Okay. Change it to an integer and store it in my guess. So then I said, okay, if the random number that was chosen up there equals my guess, document right, you got it. Else, if the random number is greater than my guess, document right, your guess is too low. And if otherwise, it means that the random number, that the guess is the bigger one. So I said, your guess is too high. If you don't get it the first time, you're out of luck. Because I don't have a loop in here. So this one starts. It generates a random number. It takes in a guess. And then after it takes in the guess, it starts asking, is the random number equal to the guess? And if it is, I put out the message that says, got it. If not, I'm asking, is the random number greater than the guess, and if it is, I'm telling them it is low, otherwise I'm telling them it is high. Okay, and then I'm done. So that's the logic that went into this. I took a random number in and I didn't bother to say I wrote it because that was for testing purposes. I took in a guess and then I checked. These probably should have been, since I was doing document right, I wasn't thinking these should be parallelograms. Because parallelograms are I/O. And so the benedict is parallelograms. That's a mistake I make a lot, is when I'm setting things up using the rectangle and not noticing that I did a document right. It's still basically understandable, except that if I followed it exactly, I would be saying I was moving your guesses too low, for example, to a message. And if I didn't have a document right at the bottom, then I'd never see any output. So it is important to keep track of the fact that whether you're having a document right sometime. Okay, does that logic make sense? Okay, so now if I want to put a loop in, where do I want to put the loop? I want to make sure I've got a picture of this before I mess it up. Okay. Good. If I want to put a loop in, first of all, I need to have a test down here, right? I need to put in a test down there. And what I'm going to test for is whether the random number and the guess are the same. If they're not the same, okay, so I'm going to test, is the random not equal to the guess? And if they're not equal, okay, then where do I want to enter in? Where do I want the loop to enter in? What do I want to go back to do? Do I want to get another random number? Do I want to do another guess? Do I want to do another test? where do I want to go in? Okay, some brave soul.
Your first if statement?
No, because then I wouldn't have another guess. I'd be testing the same guess that I've already tested. So I'd get the same answer. What do I want the user to do? I want them to guess again, right?
Right.
That's what I want the user to do. So where is it that I go in if I want them to guess again? Yeah.
At the prompt?
At the prompt, right. At this input right here, so that they guess again. So the loop's going to go right back in there so that they guess again, and then I test their new guess. I do not want to get a new random number, because if I get a random number, then I'm chasing something that keeps changing, and I will never get it right unless by coincidence I happen to. But if the random number keeps changing, then the information I got the last time through doesn't do me any good because it's a new random number. So I want to go in and ask them to guess again, which is what I did when I was going to play this. I'm going to go in and guess again. Okay? So if the random number is not equal, I want to set up a loop so I can keep playing until I get it. And so the loop is going to ask a question down here. And the loop is going to be in here. Okay? So I will loop back and go in there. Okay. So now I am going to bring up the next program, which is one game. Okay, so 4 is the right answer. I'm going to enter 2. And it's telling me, whoops, what did I just do? Your guess is too low. Then I'm going to enter 5. And it tells me your guess is too high. And then I'm going to enter 4, and it tells me you got it, and it quit. Okay? So I got all of the results. So now I'm going to view the source. And again, I'm using a do while on this. So here is my loop. And my loop is right before the my guess, although I put in a BR first. I could have put the BR in someplace else. The if statement is exactly the same. And here is my test or my condition, where I said, while the random number is not equal to my guess. So keep doing this loop while the random number is not equal to my guess. So the first time in, I guessed a number that was too low. So random number was greater than my guess. I think I put in a 2 and the number was a 4. So it wrote out, your guess is too low. Then I came down here, because I finished the if statement, and it says the random number is not equal to my guess. It's not, so I go back up, I give another guess, and this time I guessed 5. Is 5 and 4 equal? No. Is 4 greater than 5? No. So I got my guesses too high. Then I drop down, were they equal? No, so I go back. This time my guess is a 4. Are they equal? Yes, so I said document, right, you got it. Then I dropped down and said do it while they're not equal. Well, they are equal. So therefore, I ended the loop. Yes, no, maybe? Does that make sense? So the flowchart for this one is pretty much what we kind of did the last time. So I'm going to say start, and then I'm going to have a random number generated, and then I'm going to take in a guess. And it's right in there that I'm going to come back. Okay, I didn't bother with doing the document right. So then I'm going to ask, is random equal to guess? I got sick of writing words, so I'm just going to write random equal to guess. Okay, so if it is, whoops, I got it. If it's not, the next question is random greater than guess? And if the answer is yes, it's the low message. Otherwise, it's the high message. Okay, so now I've got the while. And so I'm asking, is random not equal to guess? And if it's not equal, then I'm going to go up there. If it is, I stop. If they're equal, I stop. So that's the logic that I'm doing there. Yeah.
Is it possible to have a flowchart for a for loop?
Yeah, you do it the same way. You would put the condition of the for down there. Even though it's up at the top, you'd put the condition of the for down there. Or up at the top, actually, either one. Actually, probably up at the top. The way you do with the where, with the while. The while has it up at the top. Right? The while you ask the question before you enter. So, actually, you would do that. You would put it at the top. So I can ask the question up there. But this one made sense to do the do while because I always wanted to do it once. After every yes, I want to do it, definitely. And so it made sense to do the do while. Okay. Now the next one, we are going to add one more thing. We're going to ask the player if they want to play again. So down in here, we're going to ask whether they want to play again. So we're going to add in another loop to ask whether they want to play again. And if they do want to play again, where do you want to enter?
Start.
That's right. Because if they do want to play again, you want to get a new random number so that they can play again with the new random number. So you're going to have a question down at the bottom that asks, do you want to play again? And it is going to enter up at the random number. Okay. Questions. Okay. So let me close up the ink layer and go back. And if I look at this one, it says enter your guess. So I'm going to enter the one. And it says you got it. Do you want to play again? Y or N? So I'm putting in a Y. And I got a 1 again. So this time I'll put in a 3. Your guess is too high. I'll put in a 1, and I got it. Do you want to play again? Yes. And this time I got a 4. So I'm going to put in a 2. It's too low. Put in a 4. You got it. Do you want to play again? No. Okay. So this one allows me to play the game multiple times. Okay. So, here are my to-do loops. One is before I generate the random number, as we said it should be, and one is before I play the game. And that's the way, same as it used to be. I just asked down here again, play again. Do you want to play again? Yes or no? So I put in a prompt. And then the test that I used was while play again is not equal to N. So what does that mean? If the user pushes a capital N, then I will end. What about if the user pushes a Y? Play again. What about if the user pushes a Z? I'll play again. If the user pushes a 2, I'll play again. So they have to push a capital N or they're going to play again. Now, I could have instead tested for while play again equals Y. And that means that they would play again if they picked the capital Y, otherwise they'd get out. So I make the choice of whether they, what's going to happen to them if they make a mistake. And I decided they were going to have to play again if they made a mistake and didn't hit the capital N. But I could have decided the other way, that if they didn't hit a capital Y, they were going to get out. So I can make the decision as to what's going to get them out and what's going to keep them in. Okay? So the code is exactly the same, except for those things. So I've got a stat, and I'm asking for a random number. I'm asking for a guess, and I'm going to have an entry point on either both of those. Depending on if I am still in the game, I'm going to go into the one right above guess. If I'm making a decision to play again, I'm going to go into the other one, right above random. Okay, so now I have my if statement. And just because I'm running out of room at the bottom, I'm just going to say it's the if statement. Okay, it's the exact same if statement that I had before. Okay? So, then I have, if they're not equal, if random is not equal to guess, then I'm going in right there. Okay, so I do the if, and if random ends up not being equal to guess, I go in there. Then I put out a prompt, and I ask for the Y or N. And now I test, and if it's not an N, that's actually not anything but an N. Well, I guess I can write it. Play again is not equal to N. Okay, if it's not equal to N, then I go up there. If it's anything other than an N, in other words. But it's better to just write it the way I wrote it in the program. If it's not equal to N, then I go back up there. Okay. If it is equal to N, then I drop down and stop. Notice the N's, the Y and N, when you're making a loop decision. The Y usually goes off to the side and the N goes straight down. That's usually the way the Y and N's are written. Not with an if. With an if, they go off to the left and the right. But with a end of a loop thing, they go off to the left. That was supposed to say a Y. Anyway, then we'll put in a Y there. Goes off to the side, and the end drops down. Questions? Okay. You sure? absolutely positive everybody understands this. If you are brave enough to have asked a question, half the class will appreciate it. Okay. Now I'm going to tell you what you got to do. Okay, you've all played the rock, paper, scissors game as kids. Okay, I want you to write the rock, paper, scissors game. Okay, so you're going to write the rock, paper, scissors game. Now, there are at least 100 solutions out on the web. Okay, I don't want you to use those solutions. I want you to write your own. If you start doing stuff that is fancy, that is not what you have learned, then you're going to have to write me an explanation of what you did in the program, and a very detailed explanation. Because if you're going to help yourself to somebody else's work, then I want to know that you understand it, okay? So essentially, I want it written plain and simple the way you know enough to write it. And there's a lot of very fancy ways you can write that. And if you've got to explain the fanciness if you do it. Okay, and you may have thought up and forget out the fanciness, and then that's fine, but you still have to explain it. Okay, so we have rock, paper, scissors. Okay, how many possibilities are there? Okay. First of all, I would call them 1, 2, and 3. Because it's a lot easier to work with if you decide rock is a 1, 2 is a paper, 3 is a scissors. It's just easier to work with. Because you're going to generate a random number. And the random number is going to be a 1, 2, or a 3. Okay? So you're going to generate a random number. And then you're going to have the user enter. So you're going to have the user enter something, and essentially the user is playing against the computer. Okay, so the computer, you're going to generate a random number, and then the user is going to enter something. Okay, so how many different possibilities are there here? How many different combinations?
3.
Well, if the user generates a random number, the user could enter a 1, or a 2, or a 3. So if the random number is a 1, the user could be entering either a 1, 2, or 3. So I've got 3 possibles right now. Because the computer generated a 1, the user can enter a 1, or a 2, or a 3. If the computer generates a 2, the user can still enter a 1, 2, or 3. And if the computer generates a 3, the user can still enter a 1, 2, or 3. Okay, so there's 9 different possibilities. Okay? So you can have 1 and 1, 1 or 2, 1 or 3, 2 or 1, 2 or 2, 2 or 3, 3 or 1, 3 or 2, 3 or 3. Okay, so you got 9 different possibilities. Now, there's one set of them you could ask with one question, and that is the ones that are the same for a tie. Okay, so this is a tie. This is a tie. And this is a tie. So you can take 3 of them by get rid of those 3 by saying, is the random number equal to the user? Because if it is, it's a tie. Right? If the random is equal to the user, it's a tie. Okay, so if it's a 1 and a 2, and we're saying 1 is rock, 2 is paper, 3 is scissors. If it's a 1 and a 2, who won?
through.
So did the user win or did the brand or the computer win?
Computer.
Okay, this is the computer. The computer is generating a random number. Okay. Paper covers rock, right? Am I remembering it correctly? Paper covers rock, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so who won if it's a one and a two? The computer or the user?
User.
Huh?
User.
If it's a one and a three, who won?
One, computer.
The computer, because rock crushes scissors, right? If it's a two and a one, who won? The user or the computer?
Computer.
Computer. If it's a two and a three, who won? Scissors cut paper, right? So who won? The user. If it's a three and a one, who won?
User.
Yeah, right. And if it's a three and a two, who won?
Computer.
Computer. Okay. So those are the ones that won. So you have to ask questions such that you figure out who won. Now, you can use compound questions or you can use simple questions. And it's up to you how you want to write it. But the main thing I want is the logic of you're going to ask the user to enter in a number and the computer is going to generate a number and you're going to compare those numbers. Okay, and I want you to put in a play again, but in this case the play again should generate new things for both of them, right? So if you what we just looked at, the guessing game, you could keep guessing in one game, but rock, paper, scissors, the game is over after the user and computer have each got a number and you've compared them, the game is over. Then another round is the next game. And another round, you want to get a new random number and have the user enter a new number. So you want new random and new user for every game. And the game only has one pass. There's only one pass in the game. So you only have one loop going on here. And that is, do you want to play again, yes or no? Okay? You're not going to stay in the game because the game is just one pass. You compare the two numbers, that game is over. And you play the game again, you need a new random number and a new user number. Okay? I want you to start writing the flowchart now for the if statements. Okay, so just roughly start to think through the if statements and how they would work. I would ask the tie as the first question, and that gets out of it. And the way I would ask is, if the random number equals one, then I ask the question, if the user number is equals a two, then I know that the user won. If the user doesn't equal a two, then it's got to be a three. Because if you ask for a tie at the beginning, that gets rid of those three. So now you ask, if the random number is a one, the only possibilities are two and three. So if it's not a two, the user's got to have entered a three. So try to think through the logic a little bit. Start out by saying, is the number the computer generated equal to the user entry? If it is, it's a tie. And that takes care of three of them. Those are some hints about the way I would start. Computer equals user a tie. If no, then I ask, is the computer equal to one? And if the computer is equal to one, then I find out what the user is. So that's the way I would start out doing it. As I said, you can also use ands and ors. So you can look for all the situations under which a computer won, all the situations under which a user won. That's another possibility. Thank you. And for the sake of doing this, you can assume that your user only enters 1, 2, and 3. If you really do it, you know, you should throw in what if the user enters a number other than 1, 2, and 3. But as far as I'm concerned, you can make the assumption in doing this that the user is going to enter a 1, 2, or 3. Just to not overcomplicate it. If you want to throw the part in where the user has to be caught if they do something else, feel free, but I'm not requiring that. Do you need a paper and pencil? Or are you doing it actually on that?
I'm just doing it on my phone.
I just, yeah, right. Doing a flow chart on a phone is,
yeah. It's not that hard.
Pseudocode might work better on a phone. But a flow chart, I need a little more space. Okay, in my flowchart, what do you think I'm going to ask next, right here, if the computer is a 1? What am I going to ask?
The user is greater than 1.
I don't even have to ask that. I can just ask, is the user a 2? Because if the user's a 2, computer's a 1, user's a 2, then user 1. Right? If user's not a 2, what does it mean? It means user has to be a 3, right? If we make the conclusion that they can't enter, that we're not going to let them enter a wrong number. The user has to be a 3. And so I can ask that question. If the user's a 2, then I know the computer one, the user one, else the computer one. Else the computer one, because else it's a 3. And that means the computer one. And then if the computer is not a 1, I go down to ask if the computer is a 2. So here, I would ask about the user. And here, I would ask about the computer being a 2. Yeah.
I think I got it. Can you help me check?
Sure. Don't have to ask the 3. You can just go right to that. It's not wrong to ask the 3, but since it can only be 1 or 2 or 3, then if it's not 1 and it's not 2, it's got to be 3.
Okay.
So you don't have to ask that. You can go right to this. The no could go right to that question.
Okay.
Okay.
Right?
But yeah, it's fine. And the next question you have to ask is,